This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Dr. Peter Beadham, co-founder and president of Cevis. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Dr. Peter Beadham next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 560 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Agriculture technology has come a long way since the introduction of genetically enhanced crops back in the 1990s. Dr. Peter Beadham of Cevis works with the ag industry to develop new seed traits through genetic engineering. Beadham says agriculture's future rests on the cornerstone of work by his predecessors like Dr. Norman Borlaug, who's considered the father of the green revolution.
We all stand on the shoulders of previous scientists. And I think what's exciting about where we are right now is there's this inflection point in agriculture where, plant breeding has provided and so much to all crops. Borlaug's work was incredible because he was dedicated to, again, making every acre more productive, but understand the genetics. And so for us in this modern day, we have incredible amount of knowledge around genetics. The understanding that we have so much genomic information, the actual genetics behind every trait out there, every new characteristic. So plant breeders are now using tools like molecular tools, and the toolkit has grown. And so what we've done at Cevis on the editing front is really hone a tool that allows you to go in and make specific changes in a genetic background that'll provide a new characteristic. And so, we do stand on the shoulders of all the plant breeders, including Norman Borlaug. And so it's a great time. We are at a really amazing time where you've got AI, ML working behind everything. You've got toolkit now that you can do. We can change the scale and speed of breeding.
We'll celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States this year. And if I look at our history, agriculture has been a major part from the development of the Department of Agriculture to the Cooperative Extension Service and finding new ways for our country to feed itself. The element that we face today is a technology that farmers can use effectively towards sustainability and productivity, but also that the consumer will accept. And this is where roads collide. How do you help the consumer appreciate what science is bringing to help farmers achieve sustainability and productivity goals?
So this is such an important question. Now, I've spent a lot of my career working in technologies like, the original GMO, the original making a transgenic, improving crops using transgenes. What's really important is as we bring new technologies that are not GMO, like gene editing, to the fore, is an understanding of how that intersects with plant breeders and the current food systems we have to bring really beneficial traits, not only just for the farm gate and for farmers' productivity, but also, as you mentioned, sustainable ingredients, better products for consumers. And I think understanding that what we do is this intersection with plant breeding, that it's a gene edit is indistinguishable from what occurs in nature, that it is the same as conventional breeding, but it's accelerated. We have a moment in time where we need to improve productivity and reduce inputs for farmers and allow them to be more profitable. And I think that when you do that and you end up with really great products, you've got to get out to the public to explain why that's important, and how we can deliver that more quickly. You know, one of the challenges we've had in agriculture and plant breeding is it can take, you know, 10, 15 years to put a new characteristic or new trait onto the marketplace. Gene editing is going to change that. It's going to change the scale and speed. And that's really important. So getting the public to understand, you know, the benefits, for a consumer, the benefits for farming, more productivity and the urgency, when we see, you know, climate changing and more constraints on farming than ever before, we need to really, get out there and talk about it with them.
We are on a threshold of some major decisions in the U.S., in Europe, and frankly around the world of whether society is willing to accept the science that will help farmers be more productive. Can you explain why this is something that answers questions for farmers and also for consumers?
A GMO is essentially a crop where you've taken a gene from another organism and transformed that into a crop. So you're taking a gene from another organism and putting it into the crop. Gene editing does not do that. The way Cibus does it particularly is pretty unique. And the fact is that what we do is we use the systems that are already in place in plant cells or crops that allow you to edit a specific gene in that crop. And the outcome is indistinguishable from what occurs in nature. It's the same as what happens in a breeding program. So every time you think about plant breeding and you bring genetics together, there's editing going on in a natural process of what we call DNA repair. Because we use that natural process, it's indistinguishable from what occurs in nature. And therefore, that understanding now is the precision of that is seen around the world as acceptable because it's what happens in nature.
I don't want to completely villainize GMO because it was Norman Borlaug who was able to come up with golden rice that put vitamins in the crop that didn't normally exist that helped to bring better health to individuals who consumed that crop.
No, exactly. So it was a great technology and it's created some wonderful opportunities for farmers, particularly in the USA. North and South America have adopted a lot of GMO crops and reduced the amount of insecticide, the amount of herbicide that has been utilized to control insects and weeds. I mean, it was wonderful technology. And like you say, you know, the golden rice, unfortunately didn't get to as many people as it should have because it would have saved eyesight for literally millions of people. The challenge was it was villainized, as you said, and it wasn't really developed fast enough because there was a lot of oversight and a lot of cost to get a product onto the market. It was also technology that was developed in the 90s. So now we're now in 2026. We have AI, we have all this knowledge, we have gene editing now. So here we sit in a situation now where we can do edits and develop new traits so much faster and with so much less cost. That allows us to bring the next generation of technology to that farm gate. It's really important. Your comment about the villainization of, if that's such a word, of GMO, unfortunately, was really aimed at big companies, in my mind. And I think that what has happened has that the plant breeders of this world have now really embracing the newer technologies like gene editing, which will be, the flow through to the farm gate is going to be, it's really exciting over the next few years.
How do you describe this era of agriculture and the role of gene editing, of chemistry, and the advent of biological-based products?
I look at this moment in time for agriculture as a time where you bring a lot of technologies together in a holistic approach. If you think about biologicals, they are associated primarily with a plant or crop having the access fertilizers or access what's already in the soil, making that interaction with microbes in the soil more efficient. What you need in that is the engine room, which I believe is the genetics. The genetics of the crops is really the engine room of production. How the roots interact in the rhizosphere, basically the soil, how they interact with climate, how they interact with the crop protection products that you use. So that includes herbicide, fungicide, insecticide, fertilizers, other inputs that you might put in. So it's this holistic approach of understanding that the farmers are being challenged by disease, new diseases sometimes because the climate is changing. Some of the new diseases that are moving north from the south in the USA. That interaction, the core of that in my mind is the genetics. And so that is the engine room for any crop that you're growing out there, whether it's corn, soy, cotton, alfalfa, major crops out there that really need the ability to withstand disease. So have that, you know, resistance that you need and be able to do that quickly is what the future is. And so providing new products for farmers to fight those diseases, to fight the changing climate, to interact better with the soil, rhizosphere and the microbes that are associated with that. So you've got biologicals, you've got seed treatment, you've got crop inputs, but more important, most importantly, you've got genetics. And the best genetics out there is going to allow farmers to be more profitable and provide better products to the food industry.
Do you see a day that you can develop grain crops, feed grain crops that are as productive with minimal amounts of fertilizer?
Yes, I do, because a lot of the fertilizer that is used in crops does not end up in the plant biology. So in other words, in some cases, as much as 60% of the fertilizer the farmer would put on a crop does not get to where it needs to be in the plant. In other words, it's his runoff. The nitrogen or phosphorus is not utilized in the plant correctly. So that interaction at the microbe level in the soil, that interaction in the soil and the roots is not efficient for a lot of crops. And so increasing that efficiency with the right genetics and the right traits allows you to use the fertilizer more efficiently. So you fundamentally, less fertilizer will still give you the increase in productivity that you expect from fertilizer by using less. Now, to me, that is something that's, you know, will happen in the next few years.
Discussing this industry, I think it's important to note that Cibus doesn't necessarily sell seed. You might have it one time, but now your future comes from gene editing for major companies. So how is their success tied to your future?
Absolutely. We are not a seed company. We were there at one stage a number of years ago. Part of that is to, you know, we are in the show me industry. Show me it works. But we've been able to do that, and now we interact directly with seed companies as a editing trait provider. So we're independent as a company, but what we do is take elite genetics, the best genetics that various seed companies have, take it into Cibus, and then we make the edits that will end up in a new characteristic or a new trait. And then we hand it back to them and then they take that forward to the market. So, you know, our business model, which is pretty clear and pretty clean, is, we take elite genetics, we make the edits and we hand it back with that new characteristic and we collect a royalty, on every acre that they plant. The importance of that is the speed we can do it now. And the scale that we can do it. One of the biggest challenges in the past, with older technologies were, like GMO, was that you would hand back what we call an event. And it would take, the seed company, you know, a number of years to get it through the regulatory framework, but also to get, it into the best genetics. And so there was this lag time between handing off a new characteristic by the time the farmer got to see it. What we're, you know, endeavoring to change on a major scale is that speed back to the seed company, where we're looking at 12 months is our time frame that we have it, and get it back into the hands of the seed company, because they know how to take it to market. They've got market access. They know how to do the sales and marketing. And that's the model that we're building right now.
Do you see gene editing either today or in the future, if it's allowed to advance with regulatory approval and acceptance, of bringing output traits that consumers desire?
I totally see that happening. I think that it's already happening in many ways. The next 5 years of our life, Jeff, are going to be exciting because those sorts of products are coming to the fore. So, you know, there's a number of companies out there that are looking at really exciting products like, you know, seedless berries, and a number of opportunities for consumers to see some of the benefits that they'll see at a supermarket. You know, Japan has a tomato that has a high level of GABA, which is has been gone onto the marketplace. There are a number of really exciting opportunities for the consumer. Like I said, you know, better protein, better starch, better oils.
What about those who have peanut allergens or those that are sensitive to gluten? Are there answers there from gene editing?
Knocking out allergens is going to be a really key one, and it can be in peanuts, non-allergenic peanut. Imagine that day. That's going to be exciting. We know the targets. We've got the tools to do it. It is a matter of time. It's the same with reducing the you know, the immunogenicity of gluten's in wheat. So you maintain the baking properties, but you get rid of the gluten. Therefore, celiacs have a day where they can get back to having bread and pasta. So they're the sorts of things that, because they're complex traits, they're tough to actually do in a plant breeding sense. But when you have a tool like gene editing in combination with breeding, you can get there and faster than ever before.
On April 27th, oral arguments will be heard at the Supreme Court, largely targeting Bayer and relief from lawsuits about failure to warn. Glyphosate, or Roundup in Bayer's case, was introduced back in 1974. How is the Supreme Court decision and the country's acceptance of this old technology important for the development of new technologies to come?
My first caveat is I'm not a lawyer. I'm a scientist. What's really important is, as we bring any product onto the marketplace, whether it's food, chemistry, you know, any product we think about, the regulatory agencies do what they need to do to ensure safety. And I think this, what's really important about this Supreme Court discussion and analysis and outcome is that it'll endorse the fact that the EPA did do their work on safety on glyphosate appropriately. I think that we have had a number of decades where we've used different chemistries to control weeds, as you said, insecticides for controlling insects, and also fungicides for controlling a lot of disease. And that's important that you have a really strong regulatory system that is appropriately balanced on safety. And I think the endorsement of that for the Supreme Court is really important for agriculture globally.
European Parliament has a decision on the 18th of May that may finally endorse some of these technologies in plant breeding to open the door for productivity and sustainability for farmers in the European Union.
That's one of the most exciting things that's happening in my career right now, is seeing the policies in place and underway across the globe. I think Europe has been the gold standard often of regulatory agencies looking at GMO in the past. Unfortunately, they were recalcitrant to that. But moving forward, what a lot of the regulatory agencies around the world have recognized is that gene editing will provide amazing products. And I think that Europe has worked very hard to do all the steps in that process. And we're at that point where they've got new legislation that will be adopted this year for the allowance of gene edited products in cultivation in Europe. And it'll really fast track some of the trade barriers that have been put in the past with some of these genetically engineered crops. So for us, it's very exciting. It's a game changer.
Doc, from your perspective, what are the consequences if the Supreme Court makes a company like Bayer liable, even though they have met the standards by the federal agency toward certification of product and product use? What happens if that fails? What happens if Europe says no? Are these gateways critical to the future of the food that we eat and the way it's produced?
It is absolutely critical, Jeff. When you think about the EU giving legislation for new genomic techniques is going to allow, you know, a global loosening of regulatory around opportunities in genetics, that if that stopped, it is a disaster for agriculture in my mind. The same thing with the Supreme Court is that putting in question the regulatory agencies like the EPA and safety profiles has a ripple effect that I think would be a major problem for a lot of inputs beyond glyphosate. And I think that it's important that people understand in agriculture and food that the regulatory agencies around the world have been absolutely focused on food safety and food security. And those two are what we've all been fortunate for, of having food safety and food security. And so that, I believe, could put into question some of those aspects of food security around the world, which is a major problem. So I think that the regulatory agencies around the world have harmonized on gene editing, have harmonized on how policies will be put in place, with the food safety and food security as a key issue. And I think the Supreme Court will understand that as well.
Dr. Peter Beetham, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Major innovation in agriculture, and clearly at a new threshold of what farmers and the soil and that miracle of life in the seed is able to provide. Thank you for being here. It is Open Mic, and today you have the last word.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Look, I appreciate your time with me. I really appreciate the audience listening in too. Because I do believe, you know, we have some major challenges in agriculture. You know, farmers' profitability is low right now. There's some real challenges. There's challenges when it comes to supply. And what I would like to end on, though, is a lot more optimistic future. I believe that technology, as it at an inflection point right now, particularly in genetics. And so at Cibus, being able to change the scale and speed of breeding allows us to really, you know, think through all the exciting things that we can bring to the market. But, you know, we're primarily focused on productivity to start with, making farmers more productive, making them more profitable, having to use less inputs, less fungicides, for example. And then on the flip side, as we mentioned earlier, also creating crops with more sustainability, better profiles for industrial use, for example. We mentioned non-allergenic peanut. We mentioned gluten-free wheat. Those sorts of products are really exciting. And we have the technology now. And gene editing across a number of companies globally is being seen as more acceptable because it is indistinguishable from what occurs in nature. It's the same as what's happening in plant breeding programs all around the world. So you have this moment in time where Europe is opening up the regulatory framework because they've got really good legislation now. That's happened in the UK already. It's happened in other places around the world, including North and South America. You know, we've got products that have been approved for a number of years. So it really is an exciting time. And the other thing I wanted to mention was the holistic approach. This is not just us at Cibus. It's agriculture in general. Has, you know, biologicals coming forward, continually improved genetics, you know, making every acre more productive. We don't need to chop down more forests. Agriculture can be more sustainable and more profitable in all parts of the world. And I think that's an exciting moment for us when regulatory agencies are opening up for gene editing. I'm looking forward to the future, Jeff. I think that we all should. I think there's opportunities out there, but we have to be cognizant that people want to understand that their food is safe and that the agriculture is being more productive and using less chemistry, but getting the same productivity. The last thing I'll say is, you know, being in ag for so many years, you know, one of the things that I saw very early on in my career was the number of constraints around what we have. And climate is a big one for us right now. It is changing. And, you know, working with the right genetics, we can still provide some great crops out there. So we're looking forward to expanding our portfolio of traits and working with seed companies all around the world. And so at an exciting moment. Thanks, Jeff.
Our thanks to Dr. Peter Beedham, co-founder and president of Cebus. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.